AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Lake Wazeecha and beyond, your news, talk, and sports is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Teachers, learners, schools, and communities have never faced more challenges than they do in 2023. Is education a matter of national security? Major elections, artificial intelligence, educator shortages, these issues have serious implications. Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci break it down every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. for you and your neighbor. Busted Pencils on the Civic Media Network.
Find previous shows and more at civicmedia.us.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Wendy Gillette. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says Americans may have been killed or could be among the hostages being held in Gaza after Hamas launched a surprise attack against Israel.
There has been little information about the fate of dozens of Israelis who Hamas gunmen kidnapped and took to Gaza. These include women, children, and even 85-year-old Yaffa Adar, as her granddaughter tearfully told journalists after Hamas released video of the elderly woman being taken to Gaza.
I cannot even start to imagine how scared, terrible she was. She's sick. She has no medicine with her.
Hamas says it wants to exchange the kidnapped Israelis for Hamas prisoners in Israeli jails. Linda Gradstein for CBS News. Jerusalem.
The brazen assault stunned Israelis. Associate fellow with the Middle East and North Africa program at the Chatham House, Yossi Meckelberg.
The security forces were worried about a flare-up in the West Bank. It left the South exposed, and these things that in due course will have to be investigated.
Some Republicans are claiming billions released to Iran to free imprisoned Americans helped fund the attack. Blinken appeared on NBC.
Not a single cent has been spent from that account. When any money is spent from that account, it can only be used for medical supplies, for food, for medicine. And those who are saying otherwise are either misinformed or misinforming. And it's wrong either way.
Tourists will be allowed back into the wildfire-ravaged area of Maui, angering some residents. Councilwoman Tamara Paulton.
We need certain things to be able to open to tourism. You know, we need stability of housing. We're not machines.
There's a new CBS News poll about who will become the next House Speaker after Kevin McCarthy was ousted. CBS Deputy Director of Elections and Surveys, Jen DePinto.
The American public wants a House Speaker who will work across the aisle and try to cut spending, and not someone who will try to impeach Joe Biden. House Republicans and their rank and file want some different things. Most of the nation's Republicans do seek bipartisanship, but more, almost three quarters, want a Speaker who will try to impeach Biden, and a majority also wants someone who'll be loyal to Donald Trump.
More than 2,000 people were killed in an earthquake in Afghanistan. The BBC's Yogita LeMay.
A 6.3 magnitude earthquake shook western Afghanistan on Saturday morning. There were at least three powerful aftershocks. Photos and videos coming in from villages near Herat City show homes reduced to rubble and people trying to dig survivors out from under mud and stones.
This is CBS News.
You need to hire? Indeed is with you every step of the way, helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Like any good agent, we're here for the open house, for the closing, for handing over keys. But because we're Realtors, we're here for so much more. Agents who are Realtors volunteer at nearly three times the national average. We're working to broaden access to credit, increase affordable housing supply, and ensure fair housing for all. And Realtors are bound by a code of ethics. We're here for it all. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors. That's who we are.
Exergen thermometers are the smart choice when selecting a thermometer. With children back at school, keeping them healthy is important. Got a fever? Stay home. To detect fever accurately at home, you need a clinically accurate, fast, and non-invasive thermometer. The Exergen thermometer is backed by over 100 clinical studies. Accuracy matters. Be smart and safe. Measure accurately with Exergen thermometers. Available at Walgreens and other participating retailers. Learn more at Exergen.com.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. overcast this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 53. North winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lows level off around 31. Tonight, partly cloudy skies. Partly cloudy again tomorrow, high of 51. Mainly cloudy skies expected Tuesday with daytime highs approaching 52. 56 Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 49.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. We are brought to you by Jolly Good Soda, and here is today's episode. Hi, folks. It's another episode of the Cripescast, joined by Colleen Maraca here in the studio, executive producer of the podcast. How's it going,
Colleen? Thanks for having me. Good. How are you?
You ever play Musical Mondays?
I have a different Music Monday.
What? Musical Monday?
What's that?
It's where every time you talk to someone, you must imagine you are in a music hall. And you must not reply to anyone that does not reply in song.
Wow.
See, isn't that fun?
Yeah.
It's really annoying. I used to do it in this office I worked in. I did Musical Mondays, and I would do it and just annoyed the hell out of everyone around me. Because they need me from someone. They need something from me.
Yeah. I'd be
like, I am sorry. Is that the wind I hear? So annoying.
And you wouldn't give up?
Nope. I just did it all.
I wonder why you got fired.
Ha! I didn't get fired. I got asked to leave. Without severance.
Nice.
Anyways, now I'm the boss, Colleen.
And we're going to have Music Mondays. Musical Mondays.
I think for morale, I'm going to not do that.
Yeah.
We got a great episode of the Cripescast. We are talking with Xavier Prather.
Yep.
From Big Brother.
Yeah.
The 23rd season of Big Brother. He was the winner. He is a Milwaukee guy. First African American to win a regular season in the show's history.
Yep.
Which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Good dude. We live kind of close to each other, which is nice. And
you guys can go on hot girl walks together.
Hot girl walks?
Yeah.
What is that?
You just get your Stanley out and you wear a fanny pack. Yeah. And your Sunnies and your Hokas, and then you go take a little prance about town. You don't really build up a sweat. If you do, that's great, but it's really just more about the aesthetic.
I talked to him about going biking together.
Does he like biking?
He's got an electric bike. So okay. I thought we could do a sketch, regular biker versus electric biker.
Yeah.
Like, I'm tired. I'm sitting there, and he's like, that is nothing, man. You know, yeah. I just bike 20 miles.
Yeah. But it's easier because it's on an electric bike.
Yeah. He's just wearing like jeans.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Not breaking a sweat.
That's funny. I like that.
The silly stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just got to write that. Should do it soon before the weather changes. Yeah. Good Lord.
I know. It's perfect today, though.
It is perfect today.
Yeah. Anywho, anything else before we dive into it?
Yeah. No.
Oh,
no.
Oh, yeah.
What?
It's October.
It is October, ladies and gentlemen. And boy, oh boy, do we got a deal for you. Colleen, what is the deal?
So on ManitowocMinute.com or CripsGuts.com, you click on merch. If you buy $100 or more of Manitowoc Minute merch and you add the orange oat beanie to your cart and use code OPTOBER, you'll get that beanie for free.
You get a free, and these are cool beanies. They're made in the USA, blaze orange. It's a nice thing. So, you know, just do your Christmas shopping now.
Yeah.
And you get a free hat to give to someone else for Christmas. Yep. You're saving some dough.
Yeah.
So for the folks who are thinking ahead, and by the way, we even have Christmas sweatshirts up there already. Christmas tree.
It's perfect for an ugly sweater Christmas party.
And watch out for
it. It's not ugly by any means. It's actually like really cute. But it had like, you know.
You know.
You know.
It's
I like it.
It's a little gauche.
It's good for like ugly sweater Christmas party.
I don't even know what gauche means. I just heard Taylor Swift say it once.
Mm-hmm. Are you a big Swiftie?
No. I'm not. I mean, I like a few of her songs, but
yeah.
Anyway. This intro's off the friggin' rails. Yeah. Let's get to my conversation with Xavier and everybody else. We'll see you soon. Well, thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a while. What were you doing right before you came here?
Right before I came here, I was working, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was shipping out a couple of emails just to make sure I got those away and make sure my plate is pretty like clean before coming to do this real quick. So I just meant waking up a little bit earlier.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, thanks for waking up a little earlier for us. We appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
So you're back in Milwaukee now,
mm-hmm.
and, you're from Michigan, but basically you did Big Brother and then you moved back to Michigan after that for a beat and then kind of just hung out with your family. Was that kind of how you did
it? Yeah. So after Big Brother, it was kind of trying to figure out where I was going to be. Cause like I had a lot of people trying to pull me to like New York, people trying to pull me to like LA, the bigger markets for, I guess, influencers or like anything you want to do entertainment industry wise.
Yeah.
And, I went and visited those places to kind of explore business opportunities. And ultimately I was just like, that's not my energy.
Yeah.
New York is very loud and congested. And then LA is just kind of LA. So,
you gotta really like your car in LA. Yeah. You gotta really like the interior of your car.
Yeah. So like I was just kind of like, I don't see myself living in either of those places. So until I figure out what exactly I'm gonna be doing, let me just go back home. I lived in Grand Rapids for I think about a year, and then I ended up reconnecting with my firm that I was with prior to going on Big Brother.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm ready to come back. I had still been doing some legal work part time. But at that point in time, I was like, all right, I think I'm going to go back to the law full time. I'd love to go back to my old firm. They welcomed me with open arms. And then from there, it was just kind of a matter of time before when my lease was up. Then it was like, all right, I need to move back to Milwaukee.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, get more face to face time with the partners and stuff like that.
Sure, sure. So, like, how did you first hear about Big Brother?
Kind of because of Love Island. So I've been reached out to on Instagram to potentially be on Love Island. They have a member of the casting team like DM me. She was like, hey, I think you'd be like great for Love Island. Would you be interested in, you know, applying or sending this information?
Okay, you're gonna have to pause right there. That just came out of the blue.
Yeah, like literally out of the blue. Like I hadn't watched Love Island at all whatsoever. Huh. I don't know.
Did you, how many followers did you have?
Oof, I was maybe pushing 2K.
2K?
I was maybe pushing 2K.
I thought you were saying 2 at first. I was like, okay.
2 whole followers.
Yeah.
My mom and my cousin.
So just random people, like basically a Facebook page. You've got, you know, just your friends from over the years.
My friends from like schooling and basketball pretty much, and like family. Those pretty much comprise my followers at the time. So it was very random.
Yeah.
But I did a little bit of modeling.
Oh.
I still do. So I think some of those pictures are kind of what
I see
enticed her.
I see. Good abs.
Okay abs.
Okay.
Mostly I just Photoshop really well.
Got it. Yeah. Nice. Nice. Yeah. That's what's really important.
You know, if you're good technologically, you can get away with a lot.
You can. And soon we'll have AI that'll just do all of it for us.
Yeah. At this point, I don't feel like I need to model. I'll just send out an AI.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's kind of me.
AI can do ab workouts for you and then it's done and done.
Yeah.
So you have modeling photos and you were a model in Milwaukee at that point or
Chicago. My agency was in Chicago.
Which one?
Option One Models.
Oh, shout out to Option One.
Shout out to Option One. They take good care of me. And so Love Island, I was like, I haven't seen it, so let me go check it out. And at the time it was on CBS All Access, which is now Paramount Plus.
Yep.
So I went and I checked it out. And as I was scrolling through kind of their television pages on the app, I saw Big Brother and I was like, it looked vaguely familiar. I remember I used to watch it with my pops as a kid. And so I was like, okay, let me watch like an episode or two, see what that's about. And as I started like rewatching it, I was like, I think I would do like all right at this.
Yeah.
So I applied and that application process is long. It's very long. Like it was as strenuous as filling out the application to get into the bar. Like it takes a lot. You got to know where you live. You got to know where you've been, every job you've had. Like it's a long process. It's a very long process. And you're interviewing different people within like kind of CBS's organization. And then you, once you make it to the end, you interview with like the big head honchos, executive producers and things like that. But yeah, I applied, kind of went through the process. And then before I knew it, I was getting kidnapped. It's kind of what we call it, because they take you from your home. And then that from that point on, you have no contact with the outside world.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's wild. Like, and then
they put a bag over your head when they take you, so you can't tell
anyone. You get a blindfold.
You get a blindfold.
Yeah, no, yeah, like fun. It's like a cute kidnapping though.
Like, yeah, it's, you know, cute. It's like for the TV.
Yeah,
for the tellies.
Fun kidnapping, but like, yeah. So they kind of they take you away, and then you're put in this hotel for about up to like 10 days. And at the time I went on, COVID was still like pretty prominent.
Mm.
So you're getting a COVID test like pretty much every other day, because if you get COVID, you're probably not going to go in.
Yeah.
And then you're literally just like stuck in this hotel room.
Oh man.
Just chilling there until it's time for you to go in the house.
Where's the hotel at?
It was in LA. It was like near. So the Big Brother house is in LA.
Okay.
Yeah. And the hotel was near LA. So
got it.
I couldn't tell you where it was because I was blindfolded the whole time I went there.
Was it a nice hotel?
How nice can one hotel room really be? You know,
after it wasn't, 10 days of not talking to anyone else, it's going to be a prison anyway, even if it's Ritz-Carlton.
I would say I was comfortable. Like, they didn't like just throw us in, I don't know, like a Days in. Like, it was a comfortable spot. It was just kind of 10 days there. But luckily, I brought like a few books with me. I was able to do some puzzles. Really get back into my childhood.
That was
fun.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, they're taking you into the house, and then you're trapped there I was in there for about 85 days.
Okay. So that's so much time during all of this time, the kidnapping, being in the house, everything. Mm-hmm. I know there's prize money at the end, which you got to, you know, that.
You got a decent little chunk of change.
Chunk of that, whatever the IRS didn't take, you know, you rocked him. Head down.
Yep. Immediate head down when you get to
that. But aside for that money, is there payment for anything else?
So each week that you're there, you get like a weekly stipend, essentially. And that's about, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that, but you get like a weekly stipend. I won't get into the specifics of how much, but it's not, I wouldn't say you're gonna like, you know, retire.
Right.
But like they give you some compensation for each week that you're there. So there's kind of two phases throughout the game. There's what's called pre-jury and then jury. So if you make it to jury, you're guaranteed to get that weekly stipend for the duration of the show, because they sequester you in a house to come back at the end. But if you go pre-jury, which is like the first, say, 5 to 6 evictions.
Yep.
If you go pre-jury, you get to return back to the normal world. So then you run out of that stipend because they're not still kind of catering for you. You return home.
Right.
So a lot of people's goal, or some people's goal with just going on the show, is to at least make it to jury. So that way they continue to receive that stipend for like the duration of the time.
Yeah.
But then if you go home pre-jury, it's kind of like, I got a little bit of stipend, then you're back at work in like 3 weeks.
Right.
Which is kind of like, was it worth it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for people out there who have never seen Big Brother, can you give us the 1-2 sentence synopsis before we dive into your experience on the show specifically?
Big Brother is like the Truman Show meets summer camp.
Okay.
Yeah. that's pretty much how I would describe it.
And you guys are all in one house.
Yep.
And the goal of the game is to
kick everyone else out.
Kick everyone else out.
Make sure everyone else goes insane and wants to leave, or you kick them out if they want to stay. It's the goal of the game is to be the last person kind of standing.
Yeah.
After all this time, each week there's an eviction, there's competitions, there's kind of these wacky competitions each week. Like 1 week I had to wear a tutu to go and bowl up this ramp. It's different.
Yeah.
It's different. It's great. I'm very thankful for the experience. It was life changing. But yeah, it's like I said, it's like true. Like the concept is like the Truman Show.
Mm.
You know, the society's kind of watching you on this grand scale. But then like what you're doing when you're in there, it kind of feels like summer camp.
Yeah.
Like you're trying to find ways to pass time. essentially kind of like you have handlers who are like taking you to the competitions and making sure you guys aren't doing anything like bad. Like it's very unique. So if you want to, you know, get a feel for what summer camp was like, watch Big Brother.
Yeah.
You know, and it happens during the summer, so it makes sense.
It's kind of fun in that way. Yeah.
100%.
What was the hardest thing about the experience?
Hardest thing was probably, I would say, one, being away from kind of like family and friends, no contact. So you really didn't know what was going on with your family while you're gone. Like, you don't know if someone could have passed, someone could be hurt, like things like that. You aren't privy to it. Usually I think if it's serious enough, the producers will kind of pull back the veil and like allow you to kind of like let you know, hey, like your mom has passed or like your dad has passed. Luckily, I don't believe that we had that happen on my season, but I've seen it happen on other seasons where someone had a family member pass. And so they were then able to kind of make a decision on whether to stay or to go. But yeah, being away from family is tough. And then just kind of being in the house continually for 85 days straight, kind of playing the game. You don't really have a moment to turn it off, because it's a very social game. It's designed to be a social experiment.
Yeah.
And so like you don't really have like an off day. And so you're 24/7, you're kind of scheming, wondering if people are backstabbing you. Like it's designed to make you lose your mind, essentially. And but that aspect, I don't know, kind of found that aspect fun.
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah. So
it is really interesting though, that kind of, like why did you find it fun?
It was one, I think a lot of it has to do with my cast. I got lucky and had a cast full of like just really good people.
Yeah.
Really good people, really fun people. So that made it, I think, a very rewarding experience. Even if I had like lost, I still would have been thankful to have met those people. But also I kind of had the mentality of like, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to win before I even went in there. So like for me, when I was in there and like, if I felt like I needed to lie or backstab, I didn't feel so, I guess, personal. Not to say it never felt personal, but at times it was easy for me to kind of compartmentalize and just be like, look, this is just me playing crazy poker, poker. So it's like, you try to find ways to make fun of it, even though it's kind of a interesting experience.
That's really what it is. And everyone's in on the game.
Oh yeah. So there's like anyone who goes in there, like, you know what you signed up for. Mm-hmm. So like that's also makes it kind of fun, is just because it's like, all right, who's going to get who first? That was awesome. It was fun.
And a big part of your victory there was setting up your alliance, the Cookout Alliance.
The Cookout Alliance, which is myself, Tiffany Mitchell, Kylan Young, Aza Awesome, Hannah Chata, and Derek Frazier. Who set it up? That's a debate that's happened between Big D and Tiffany. So I'm going to let them figure that out.
Okay.
But then I named it. I came up with the name for the Cookout. And then Tiffany Mitchell came up with kind of the plan that helped us, that pretty much set the foundation for how we were going to get all of us to Final Six. And we did.
What was that plan?
So the plan was essentially, we have our core alliance, which is us six individuals. And the goal was to find somebody outside of our alliance to have as kind of a buddy or a partner. So that way, in the event we were ever in danger of going home for like eviction, we could just sit next to our buddy, and then we would have enough votes to where we could vote out the buddy instead of us. So it gave you kind of a shield, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked flawlessly as we kind of executed the strategy throughout the game until we all reached Final Six. And then once we got there, it was pretty much a free for all. Like, anybody can get it. It was
right.
What kind of the mentality we had. And fortunately, I was the last one left.
Well, and the goal of the Cookout Alliance was to essentially, I don't know if in the moment, but certainly it was to make history for the show Big Brother.
Yeah. So historically on Big Brother, house guests of color have not done particularly well. There's never, up until my season, there had never been a black winner on the show before in the non-celebrity edition. Mm-hmm. The celebrity edition, Tamar Braxton won. Mm-hmm. But on the just kind of regular U.S. edition of Big Brother, a black person had never won. And I said before I even went into the house that it was going to be essentially my goal to either do what I can to help crown the next Black winner or be that first Black winner. And that was something that was important to me. So to get into the House and then find five like-minded individuals, it just made that goal seem far more feasible. Something, it seemed like something that was actually tangible, where to a lot of past Black House guests, it was something that was just kind of, I don't know, like a, almost like a fool's gold. Like they might think they have a chance, but they ultimately didn't. And the goal of the cookout was not only to ensure that we would get a first Black winner, but it was also to kind of make sure that future house guests of color never feel like they're at a disadvantage when playing the game, you know, to make it to where like the cookout should never happen to happen again, because everyone feels like they're playing on a level playing field and people aren't having these biases or having these microaggressions kind of influence and dictate how they're going to play the game. That was something that was very important to us. And we do feel like in some respects, we definitely accomplished and have impacted these future seasons. So,
I mean, that's got to feel good.
It does. It
to
does.
You. And then on top of that, as it got down to just you guys doing it, mm-hmm. how did you then get to be the winner?
So prior to getting to Final Six, I've been focusing a lot on like having strong relationships within that group of six. I had solid relationships with people outside of our alliance. Like I tried to treat everyone with kindness and respect. I didn't want to be a jerk to anybody. Like I tried to just generally be be cool with everybody. But once we got to Final Six, I was trying to make sure I had it set up to where I had alliances within that alliance. Like I had a Final Three with Tiffany Mitchell and Hannah Chada. I had a Final Three with Derek Frazier and Azza Awesome. I had a Final Two with Kylan Young. I had a Final Two with Derek Frazier. I had a Final Three with Derek Frazier and Kylan Young. Like I had a lot of deals within that alliance to give me as much security as possible. So like when people are looking at taking shots, I'm hoping they're looking at everybody else. Yeah. Or I can at least point them in the direction of somebody else. And that's just kind of what continued to happen. And then it hit a certain point to where I just won every competition to get to the end.
That is interesting. Yeah. And then you ended up winning. And I mean, were you surprised? Was this strategically, you're like, of course I won?
I wouldn't be so arrogant as to be like, of course I won. Okay. Like, no, I would say the time when I felt like, because I get this question a lot, which is like, when did you know you were going to win? I would say the time where I felt like I had a very good chance to win was after our second double eviction when Tiffany Mitchell and Hannah Chada went home. So at that point in time, it would have been remaining in the house would have been myself, Kylan Young, Azza Awesome, Derek Frazier. And I felt like if I make it to the final two chairs and sit next to any of them, I probably win.
Yeah.
So that was, I would say around that time was when it felt very clear that I have a very good chance to win. And I had kind of set myself up to where like, even within that four, at some point, every single person in that four said they were going to take me to final two. So I was like kind of guaranteed final two if I didn't take myself there anyways, which was a very good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be so arrogant to be like, I walked in the house and you know, yeah. No one can hang with my stuff. So I'm just going to win. Like, nah. I'll leave that for Talladega Nights.
What did it feel like when you were finally crowned? When you finally won, what was that
feeling? Kind of surreal. Like it's interesting because when I was in the house, I kind of would have like, I guess, vision, so to speak, but I could like visualize seeing myself win. And when she actually like pulls up that final key, your name's on it, and you realize that you've won, you kind of black out for a second. You know, there's a lot of emotion that happens. You're happy, but you're also like kind of crying because you survived.
Yeah.
Then you walk out and all the confetti comes down. But then you also see everyone else and you're like, okay, are you guys like pissed? Are you happy? Yeah. Like, what's our energy here? Yeah. But like, luckily it seemed like for the most part, everyone was thrilled, which was great. And yeah, it's kind of interesting because like you're in the house and so you have no idea how you're perceived. And that doesn't quite set in until you get back to the hotel room after, you know, the finale happens. And then you can kind of sit down, you get your phone back. But I locked myself out of my phone because I couldn't remember my passcode.
Oh, right.
So, like, yeah, I got the phone. Because after finale night, especially if you make it far in the game, you're on an interview circuit. So I was, like, interviewing from... I had a bunch of interviews right after the finale. And then that next morning from like 5 a.m. to probably like, I would say like 4 or 5 p.m. the next day. It was just straight interviews. I was zooming all over the country. Entertainment Tonight came and Kevin Frazier interviewed our whole alliance in person. And it was a whirlwind of all that. And I still couldn't get into my phone. So I was just kind of like, all right, well, maybe once I get into my phone, I'll be able to figure out how life is. And it's weird because you come out and you have to kind of get reintegrated into society.
Yeah.
And for some people, that's a more difficult transition than others. For me, I didn't find it too difficult. Part of that is because when I was in there, I was just very conscious of the fact that, like, this is a show. Like some people, you get in there and you kind of, it becomes your reality.
Yeah.
And that's a hard kind of wall to break. For me, like if I'm walking in the house and all of a sudden I just hear a camera zoom in on me, it's like a constant reminder, in my opinion, that like, hey, you're still on camera. You're on TV. You're on TV 24/7, which I think that's an aspect of the show I didn't bring up earlier, but we're on camera 24/7, every single room in the house, all day, every day. Which is a thing in and of itself, but yeah, so you get out of the house and you're trying to get reintegrated into society, figure out, you know, what did you miss? How were you perceived on the show? Like, were you hated? Were you loved? Like, it's a lot. It's a lot of information that you kind of have to get stimulated with in a very short period of time and then figure out what life looks like after that.
Well, it's a very interesting social experiment for a couple of reasons. And I think one of the biggest ones is what you brought up here is everybody is off their phones. Mm-hmm. And we live in this society, which is we spend all of our time on our phones. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, you know, this very fake setup that you have with all these other people, you may even have more of a real sort of idea in some ways of life in some ways that the rest of society, I think, maybe is lost since we're always on our phones. Did you feel any of that? Or is that just sort of a thought that I have that doesn't quite translate?
No, I think you do feel some of that. I think you realize, or at least you're more conscious of maybe how in tune to technology you actually are. Because like, and it also gives you the chance to like appreciate, like, I don't know, going outside.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like a lot of people, especially in today's society, I feel like they're so kind of wrapped up in technology and like games and things like that, that they forget like there's a big, beautiful world out there that is just like kind of waiting to be explored. Yeah. I think for a lot of people, they didn't really get outside until COVID hit. And because once COVID hit, I feel like that was the only kind of, I don't know, like a release that people would have, be able to go outside, go to the beach or go for a hike or something just because they weren't able to do anything else.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, with Big Brother, it was kind of like, you know, I think it was more realizing like, hey, I can survive without my phone for a little bit.
Yeah.
As long as it's in a controlled environment.
Right, right.
Yeah. But, I don't know. That would be a question you probably would have to ask everyone individually. I think it differs for each person. But generally, I do think you either gain a greater appreciation for your technology or you gain a greater appreciation for being kind of off the grid.
Right. Right. And what did you gain? Did you gain?
Oh, I appreciated being off the grid.
Yeah.
I think, like, it was on national television, but like since being off the show, I kind of do what I can to prioritize having a certain level of privacy. I just because, and that's primarily because I was like on national television and was able to be watch 24/7. So like now when I come off, I kind of want to make sure those aspects of my life that are important to me, I just kind of keep them to myself or disclose them to the extent that I feel comfortable, you know?
Yeah.
Because once you become like a public figure, once you make private things public, it's very hard to get that back. I feel, especially in today's society. But if you kind of start off with more of an air of privacy, then you can kind of pick and choose what you would like to make public.
Yeah, that is interesting, isn't it? Like a comedian, a friend of mine, a comedian, you know, said that too about like stories, right? Like you post, I post a lot of videos or whatever, but stories about what you're doing on a daily basis. As soon as you start doing that, people are going to maybe want more of that and then maybe expect that. Now this time that you're spending when you're not doing all the other things, now even your personal time is in yours. And it's, it's a tough thing. It's a tough balance.
So with you being a comedian, do you, are you ever like nervous about things that you might post or things that you might say in like a stand-up show that could be like, quote unquote controversial at all?
Oh, I mean, there's so much of that. And a lot of my comedy is like, I'm not a shock comedian or I'm not trying to, there are comedians that it is their goal to push the boundaries of what is socially acceptable and what isn't. That's not really my thing. But of course, there are things that you say that could be clipped out, like just a segment and then taken out of context. But, you know, and that's why when you go to a comedy show, like you go see Dave Chappelle, they take your phone at the door. They actually have the, there's this whole business in the comedy world about having these little Ziploc locked bags.
I went to a comedy show at the, I think, was it the Laugh? It was in New York. I went to a comedy show at, is it like the Laugh Cellar or something?
Comedy Cellar.
Yeah. And they had to, we had to put our phones away. Before we even walked in. So, yeah, I definitely am familiar with that.
And that's kind of to, avoid that thing. But no, I try. It's not, everyone's got their angle, and my angle isn't very much so on that. It's more on the observational and sort of Midwest life and all that kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's how I knew who you were, because I've seen some of your skits regarding like Midwest stuff, which I've only lived in the Midwest throughout my life. So like, it's always funny when I hear like a debate between like soda and pop.
Like, how, what'd you grow up calling it?
So like, it was soda until I got to high school, and then it was pop. And I don't know why. That's just how it was. It was soda. Like a big thing that I used to drink growing up was Jones soda. I was a big fan of like the Jones soda, particularly the blue one. The blue Jones soda I had was like my favorite. And then I don't know, once I hit like high school, it was more of like Mountain Dew. Or like, my dad's a big Faygo fan. So I had a lot of Faygo growing up. And yeah, I called those like, it was a Faygo pop. And it was, you know, Mountain Dew's pop, Pepsi's pop, but I don't know why.
That's funny. Wait, now, what was the name of the soda you said you grew up with? I forget. Jones.
Jones soda. Yeah, that's it. 100%.
Nice. And it says cane sugar soda.
Oh, yeah. That's that's the legit stuff right there. I actually, I don't know that I've had that. Is that a Michigan thing?
It might be, but like I grew up in like a, or like up until about high school, I was in a small rural town, and those were like crack. Like we, anytime we could go to the local gas station, we would grab two or three Jones sodas and just kick them back. And it's just, it's like, it's just literally just bubbly sugar. That's all it is.
That's kind of what Jolly Good, they actually sponsor the podcast, but that's kind of this, like just a Wisconsin thing. You know, I mean, you can get it online otherwise, but like I grew up with this stuff, and then it kind of went away for a little bit, and then they brought it back, but kind of a similar vibe.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Hi, I'm Kirsten from Pentatonix. We've all learned how to cope with more time alone. With more time spent isolated or at home, the need for companionship has grown. If you've considered adding a pet to your family, please check with your local shelters and foster organizations. Stray pet numbers have grown immensely over the past several years, and the trauma caused to these animals is devastating. Adopt pets, they need us more than we know. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR.
Overcast this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 53. North winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lows level off around 31. Tonight, partly cloudy skies. Partly cloudy again tomorrow, high of 51. Mainly cloudy skies expected Tuesday with daytime highs approaching 52. 56 Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 49.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest radio station ever. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
What was a small town that you grew up in?
Lawrence, Michigan. I was in Lawrence, Michigan from, I'd say, like first grade up and through eighth grade. And then from there, I moved to Kalamazoo, Michigan. And Kalamazoo, Michigan is where I consider, like, that's my hometown.
Yeah.
But Lawrence, Michigan definitely had, like, a part in my upbringing, for sure. So I still like show them love and shout them out. But yeah, it was a Lawrence was like a one stoplight kind of town.
Yeah,
like, it was tiny. It was absolutely tiny. But you know, a lot of my stepmother's family lived there.
Okay,
so that was kind of how we ended up in Lawrence.
Got it.
Yeah,
nice. And so yeah, what did your folks do growing up and everything?
My dad was an accountant for a while, and then now he does like kind of IT stuff as I started to get a little bit older. And then my birth mother typically works at like CVS and also does like some hair cutting. And then my stepmother was a banker, so like, gotcha. Yeah, pretty just, you know, normal jobs.
Yeah, normal.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, nothing crazy. I definitely didn't have like a lawyer in the family prior to like in my parentals prior to me going to school. So, but yeah, my parents, I love my parents. They were great. It was a unique upbringing, but you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
And when were you playing ball from the get go?
Yeah. Yeah. I got a baby picture of me holding basketball, and I'm pretty sure I couldn't even like walk yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, which makes me question. I was like, did I even like basketball? Or like, was it just forced on me? But yeah, I played ball from elementary all the way through college. And I played it up in middle school, and then high school, I went to Gull Lake High School, played there, was on varsity 3 years, signed to play basketball at Spring Arbor University near Jackson, Michigan. They were a Division II level school for the NAIA. Played there for 4 years, thought about going pro. Because you know, LeBron was calling me. I was just like, all right, it's time to take my talents to wherever I need to go. Yeah. Ended up tearing my ACL. So that was kind of a bummer. And what really pissed me off about tearing the ACL isn't even like the injury, it was more so like when it happened. Cause it was the beginning of my junior season. I was having like a good year.
Yeah.
I was starting. I felt like at that point, I was kind of one of the main go-to guys on the team.
Yeah.
And we were winning, which was great. So, and it happened within the first two possessions of our first conference game. I went up, we had a play designed for me to go up and get an alley-oop. And I run around the back screen. I go up and the defender was lagging behind me. The pass was a little bit late. So the defender's lagging behind me and he kind of like pushes me just enough to where like when I landed, you know, the knee's supposed to go like that.
Yeah.
Mine went like that. And yeah,
man,
ACL was gone. And it's funny because like my coach always would have this saying, he would say, are you hurt or are you injured? Like if you're hurt, suck it up, get up, run down the floor. We'll get you some tape or something, give you some ibuprofen. You'll be fine.
Right.
But if you're injured, then like, okay, you need to sit it out because that probably means you need surgery. But because of that, it's forced like a lot of his players to develop a high pain tolerance.
Yeah.
So like I tried to get up. I tried to get up and my leg wasn't like agreeing with me.
Oh, man.
So I was just like, all right, I'm going to go back down for a second. And then like, even when the trainer ended up coming out onto the court, tried to help me off, I didn't want to show that like I wasn't going to come back out. So I like tried to like get him off of me and like walk, and that didn't work.
Oh, dude.
So the trainer ended up helping me off, and it was weird because right after it happened, like the swelling wasn't that bad. Mobility wasn't terrible. It obviously wasn't quite where it needed to be. They do like this lock test with your knee to see if it kind of catches.
Yeah.
And if there's like a little bit of a gap there, then they know something's up. And that was the main thing for concern. So we ended up going, I went and saw like a specialist in Jackson who particularly deals with a lot of ACL injuries. And we got the MRI. And I was like, okay, well, it probably is like maybe a torn meniscus or something like that. But I don't think it's going to be the big one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the doctor comes back in. He's got the MRI results in his hand. He just said it very like just monotone. Like he didn't care.
No bedside manner.
No bedside manner whatsoever. He came in. All right, young man. So it appears you tore your anterior cruciate ligament. And I was like,
English?
Yeah. I was like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And then I like pieced together anterior cruciate. Ah. And I was like, wait, I tore my ACL. And he was like, yep. I was like how bad? He was like, oh, full tear. It's gone. So yeah, that was tough because it was a good year. It was a good year. And then I was sidelined for the rest of that year. And I had played in one more game than like would have allowed me for a medical redshirt. So in the NAI, I think if you had played in like 6 or 7 games, you were allowed a medical redshirt due to injury. And I had just played in like the 8th game. That was the beginning of the 8th game. So technically I didn't qualify for the medical redshirt. So then I had to sit out that whole season. Then when next season came, I had to decide like, okay, do I feel ready to come back and play, or do I redshirt this season to try to get back to 100%? So I ended up having to redshirt the whole next season and then came back the following year, which kind of sucked because like the class that I came in with, some of my best friends were in that 2016 graduating class I had to redshirt in because of my injury. So I had to sit out and then finally got to come back and finish out my season for the 2016-2017, or finish out my career for the 2016-2017 season.
So wait, I'm a little bit confused on this. The redshirt thing, what does that exactly mean?
So redshirting, if you get a medical redshirt, they basically, you maintain that year of like athletic eligibility.
Which means scholarship eligibility?
Yes. Okay. Yes. But you can't physically play. Right. So you're like sitting out. So it maintains that eligibility, but you're just not playing. So I had to sit out for another year because I redshirted that what would have been my original senior year.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did that change? Because at that point, you know, you were thinking, oh, maybe I would go pro. Did that change sort of your schooling and your focus in schooling?
1,000%.
A bit? Yeah.
I think me tearing my ACL is a big reason why I'm a lawyer.
That's 100%.
Because that was the first point in time, like, because up until that point, I was like, I'm going to go play overseas for however long I can play overseas. And it was looking like a very real possibility. Even after my injury, it still was a real possibility. But I'd never fully considered what I was going to do besides basketball up until that point. And so it forced me to kind of figure out, hey, clearly basketball doesn't last forever. So what's plan B?
Mm-hmm.
And at that same time, when I was recovering after having surgery, I took a business law course. And I enjoyed it. I found it challenging. And I also found it intellectually stimulating. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe I could look at being a lawyer. I was getting my degree in criminal justice. I was always thinking I would be like Shamar Moore on SWAT.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit tanner. And like, and it was like, my dad wasn't on board with that. Neither was my mom. She was like, it's my life, but I understand I don't really want to get shot. So maybe we look at being a lawyer. And then I ended up continuing to move forward with the process. I took the LSATs. I started clerking at a criminal defense firm in Kalamazoo, and I matriculated. I did my first year of law school at Valparaiso University School of Law, which no longer exists. So then I transferred to Marquette and did my last 2 years at Marquette.
Okay, got you. And that's kind of what brought you to Milwaukee. Now you're in Wisconsin,
yeah.
Michigan. Did you grow up a Lions fan?
Yes.
Wow. What's that been like?
It's a lot of frustration. It's a lot of broken TVs. It's a lot of broken video game controllers. It's just, it's a lot of broken. That's how I would categorize being a Lions fan. It's just, you're just broken.
Yeah.
But like, it seems like for the first time in like a long while, it's like, okay, we're pretty competitive here. Like, I know did the Chiefs lose again this past week? Yeah, they did. They lost to the Ravens.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're still the Chiefs.
Yep.
That's how I was like, we're going to take that win. That's a good win. But yeah, I mean, like with being a Lions fan, you know, we, we had Barry Sanders.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get Megatron.
Yeah.
And then Stafford goes and wins a ring with the Rams. And it's like, come on.
I know. Yeah, you are due one.
We need something. Like, it doesn't even necessarily have to be like a Super Bowl, but give us like a couple playoff wins. Like, let us feel like, oh man, we might could possibly just get far enough to lose again. Like, come on. Yeah. Give us a good feeling. But yeah. And then it's funny for me at work, because everyone knows like I'm a Lions fan. My work is predominantly Packers fans.
Yeah.
And I remember like when I was first with the firm about a couple of years ago, we had this we all went out and got some pizza to watch the Packers and Lions game. And at halftime, I believe the Lions were up like 14-0.
Yeah.
I'm talking mad shit. I'm talking so much shit. I'm just like, cheeseheads. This is pathetic. This is pathetic. Y'all not going to score. I'm pretty sure they won that game 28-14. Like the second half, the Packers came back and just destroyed us. And I went into work the next day and I didn't say anything. I was just like, maybe they won't even notice. Like I'm here. They won't even notice. And then I go to my email. Full. How about them Packers, huh?
You know what, though? You had to talk smack when you had the opportunity to talk smack. You guys, it's if you win a quarter, you got to start. Because when else are you going to get the opportunity to talk smack?
I was like, you know what? I think the reason they lost is because like at halftime, I left and went back home. So I was like, I've seen everything I need to see. Let me go home.
Yeah.
They're going to handle the business in the second half. And I was like, me going home is probably why they lost. Like, if anything, you guys are lucky. Y'all are lucky that I went home, because otherwise we would have whooped your ass.
I like that you're, like, employing your legal degree on why, you know, the Lions should have some respect in this.
Oh, I use my legal degree to bullshit my way through life. My fiance loves it. But, yeah, it's being a Lions fan has been interesting. But I'm hoping, you know, Goff at the helm. He seems like he's solid. We got some good young pieces. And it's just, I'm like, all right, let's put something together here. Let's have a season to be proud of.
Yeah, I got to say, after last season, I respect the heck out of the Lions, especially since you guys had no chance of getting into the playoffs. And your only Super Bowl was ensuring the Packers didn't get into the playoffs.
Yep.
And it was successful. And I got to say, I respect it. I respect it.
So I'm assuming you're a Packers fan.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, big Packers fan. How do you feel about Aaron Rodgers?
Aaron Rodgers? Okay, so first of all.
Because I feel like people are really hot or cold with it when it comes to Aaron Rodgers.
I mean, initially, when he went to the Jets, I was like, fine. I was like, great. You know, because I feel like we've been stuck in sort of, we've seen it time and again. We get to NFC championship, NFC championship, lose it. When we couldn't even beat the Lions, no offense, to get into the playoffs, I was kind of over it at that point.
That
I
was like,
we just got to change things up, you know? Rodgers, look, I think Rodgers is a great entertainer. Even four plays on the Jets, goes out for the season. He does a post, you know, saying it's always darkest before dawn. I will be back. I mean, you got to respect the guy who's like always, football's just BS entertainment, you know, at some level. So people who are taking that entertainment to the next level or taking it outside, his podcast appearances or whatever, it's all fun, you know. But, you know, as a Packers fan, that's one level of looking at football.
Yeah.
As a Packers fan, there's this whole other level of like, I grew up as a kid, like if the Packers lost, I'd like go out to my tree and cry. You know, I was that much of a loser, you know, but and there's still some of that inside of me where like, so with Rodgers, I was just over him at the end of the day. I kind of had a little bit of a, I want to see, you know, hey, you can't do it without the Packers.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to see it like this. You know, I didn't want him to tear his Achilles and all that. But, you know, we'll see what happens next year. I think at the end of the day, he's a good entertainer. People like him or hate him.
Yeah.
You know, they love him or they hate him. And I think that like, if you're an entertainer, you know, that's That's kind of the deal. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like the is seeing the Big Brother thing what it is. And then like you get really invested in it. But at the end of the day, it's a game. Oh, it's a social experiment.
The fans are passionate. I'm sorry. You still say go out and cry at your tree.
You're still thinking about that? Did you do that?
Well, no, if I would have did that, oh my gosh, I would populate so many forests. It would be fantastic. But it's funny when you're kind of in the industry a little bit, you kind of know how things work.
Yeah.
Seeing how passionate fans get.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, why are you so passionate about this?
I know.
You know whether or not like the Packers win or lose, it really doesn't have any bearing on like what's going to happen in your life. Unless you're like, gambling your mortgage.
Which then, some people are these days.
Yeah. So I was like, so maybe, you might need to realign your priorities, but like, if you generally, if they lose, like you'll be okay.
Yeah.
There's no need to, start sending hate mail to the players. Like, you cost me 5 fantasy points because you dropped that catch. It was like, is it that deep? does it need to be that serious?
I know.
I can genuinely tell you he tried his best. I can almost guarantee you.
Yeah.
Unless they're shaving points like the longest yard or some shit.
I was going to ask before we rock and roll here, being in Michigan, did you ever grow up thinking that you guys were the Mitten State?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%.
But
sounds so childish.
Thank you. What about Wisconsin, though? Don't you think Wisconsin looks like a mitten a little bit?
Can we see a picture of Wisconsin, the state?
Can I look at
it real quick?
I'd be happy to. Let's pull that up.
Because Michigan is just bow. But I wish we had gone with like the glove. Like that just sounds a little more, because Gary Payton and like,
right,
but then on the negative side you got like OJ, so like maybe maybe the mitten is better.
See, look at that.
You're saying that looks like a,
it looks like a mitten. You got Door County, that's your thumb,
okay, yeah,
that's a hand. It looks like, yeah, so you cut half your thumb on a table saw, sure, and then your pinky's a little swollen from that same injury somehow. And then, you got your middle finger, right? Like up there by the Apostle Islands,
Charlie, you might need glasses.
Well, no. Okay, now pull up Michigan. Come on.
You're going to see Michigan and you're going to see a very prominent thumb and then the makings of some fingers. But like they're not lined up. But like you can see how it's a mitten.
Okay. All right.
That I saw a stick. Yeah. Look at that hand right there.
Okay.
If you go with just the lower peninsula, don't.
Oh, yeah. So that's.
If you go with just the lower peninsula, yeah, that's 100% like a winter mitten.
I'm going to give you that.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you that mitten.
Yeah. So see, now that I look at this, what you were trying to sell Wisconsin, no.
Okay. No. I'll give you the mitten as long as Wisconsin gets the UP.
That does make more sense.
Yeah, that does make a lot more sense.
It does make more sense.
Be not the Mitten State.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be whatever shape Wisconsin plus the UP is. Because also, we're connected to the UP. You guys had to build that bridge.
Mackinac Bridge.
Yeah.
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 So, I mean, yeah. Did we just solve like the Michigan-Wisconsin rivalry? So like we get Mitten and you guys get the UP?
Yeah.
That
would solve it.
Can you imagine how many things would be just resolved if two men just sat down
and hashed it out
like good Midwesterners?
I know. Seriously. We just solved. And you're a lawyer, too, so you can probably make this happen.
Well, I might have to make a few calls, but
yeah. A few calls. That's
a few,
all.
A few calls.
That can be on your billboard.
David Gruber. I used to work for him.
What's that?
I used to work for Gruber.
Did you work for Gruber?
Yeah. I was a law clerk at his law firm while I was in law school. I did it for most of my, so in law school, the grades are like 1L, 2L, 3L, which just stands for how many years you've been in law school.
Yeah.
So during my 2L year, which was my first year at Marquette, I was working for Gruber as a law clerk. And I clerked there all throughout the summer before I started working at my firm now, Reinhardt. But yeah.
David, how'd you like it?
I didn't mind it. And the sports is definitely, like the sports culture at Gruber is very prominent. Like,
oh yeah,
there's sports memorabilia everywhere. Everyone watches all the teams. Like, it's very cool. David's a good dude. Nancy is definitely like, she's kind of like, when I view Gruber, like Nancy's definitely like the heavy. Like, she's
oh yeah,
oh yeah, and she's brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. And then their son, Steven, former basketball player too. Super cool guy.
Is it actually one call?
This is what the people want to know. Is it actually one call and that's all? I'd say it depends. It depends on the situation. So yeah, you know, nice little free plug for David and Nancy Gruber.
Yeah.
Got you guys.
And for those of you who are listening outside of the greater Milwaukee area, the Gruber billboards are one call, that's all. So there you have it. Now you have the full explanation. That is it for my conversation with Xavier. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you follow him. Colleen, where can you follow him?
Follow Xavier on Instagram, Xavier E. Prather. Don't forget the E in there. And then also you can follow us on all platforms at Cripescast, at Charlie Barons, at Me Into Walk Minute. Find our show any place.